Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
Well, hello there. I'm Josh Ozersky, Mr. Cutlets, as what I used to be called before my current ascent. Now I'm here with Stephanie Cohen, Ace newspaper reporter.
I can still call you Mr. Cutlets.
I would hope you would.
I enjoy it.
I'll never get another theme song like that.
You'll never get another theme song as good. And also, Cuddy's a term
well,
of
that's
affection.
That's a platism. In any case, we're here at the Heritage Radio Network. Mm. At Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick. That theme, by the way, Steffi, which I know you and everyone else rightly admires, is by Life in Don Ralph and Life in a Blender is my house band.
How did
band.
You get him to do that?
Wait, Steffi, I gotta do the intro. You have to let me get the expository information or the, what do you call
Forgive
it?
Forgive me, listeners.
Well, the stuff on the top there, we say we're at the Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's in Bushwick, the wonderful Italian restaurant, and this show is sponsored by Fairway Market, which that's a subject that's will come up in this segment or
that's
not or
good,
this
that's
show.
A good teaser.
But you know that I like, even aside from Fairway's decision to sponsor this show, that I've been a big
advocate.
No, it's,
how could anyone blaspheme Fairway? Is there anything bad to say except that it's too crowded?
You know, the people, somebody might say, oh, well, they like the Whole Foods better, or they like...
They can like Whole Foods and Fairway. They're complimentary.
I don't think they are. The Fairway... You know what? It's true, because the produce... Anyway, I don't want to speak slightingly of the Fairway produce program, although certainly when you consider how manifestly superior their meat program is... And
is it?
Yeah,
oh,
forget
well,
it.
Well, they have that locker...
I mean, and in terms of, there's literally no place in the world, I don't think, that you have an olive oil program like that.
What do they do? You pump your own?
No. I mean, the guy, Steve Jenkins, who's the olive oil, the cheese and olive oil guru at Fairway, has this encyclopedic virtuoso knowledge of olive oil and olive oil production. And
is that right?
Yeah, and he's like the... God, I'm trying to think, but you know what? Like, there's hardly anybody else that knows as much about anything as he knows about olive oil.
Even within the confines of the Italian state, country?
They don't, apparently the Italians are not the ones to go to for olive oil. A lot of the Italian olive oil is just Spanish olive oil that
really?
They slap like Mama Leone labels on.
No shit. Am I allowed to curse?
You are.
No, fuck. Really?
The single press oils that he gets, that he imports and bottles himself on the Fairway label. Like, there's 80 varieties. I mean, this sounds like an infomercial for Fairway.
I'm fascinated. I didn't know
I want to talk about Thanksgiving and turkey-related objects and
well, you
what
need
to
olive
do
oil
and how to
for
cook. Well, I don't know if you
dinner.
Do for that dinner, but I mean, the point is, like, there's 80 kinds of olive oil at Fairway, but you're an idiot if you buy anything except the big Fairway single oil, you know, what do you call it?
Single press
oils. Yeah, like I like the there's one that they come from Umbria, the very nutty. That's one that I like the best. There's also what they call the Gata Erdes Spanish one. That's a very fruity, intense, heady olive oil. And then there's other ones that have more of that like kind of grassy chlorophyll taste.
Did you do an olive oil tasting there? Obviously.
Every time I go, they have little pieces of bread as an olive oil tasting.
Why don't I know this? It's because I don't have a car.
Well, Steffi, you were asking me before a number of probing questions. Yeah,
well, that's what my question is. You don't have a car. Thanksgiving's coming up. I mean, forget the don't have a car. Thanksgiving shopping, man, is a bitch. It's hard. Especially we work. We only have Thursday off. How do you do it? Can you talk us through an efficient Thanksgiving dinner shopping spree?
It's a little bit late in the day.
Your picks.
Well, I would hasten as the last phonemes issue out of the Mr. Cutlet song, I would hasten to a market, and it really, especially a Fairway, but also or a Whole Foods, or even a good regular market like the Black Hat ShopRite on McDonald Avenue.
Okay,
will do. And basically, I would get the meat for Thanksgiving, and I would get two kinds of, you know, what I'm doing at my house. I don't like turkey. I don't know if you know that.
How did turkey even become?
I got to first tell you the story of the.
I would like it if you would start with before that, actually.
There was nothing before.
Let's start with King James.
Are you
fleeing religious persecution?
No, Steffi. I think that you would maybe had pot brownies before you came here or something. No, the turkey. Turkey is de rigueur on Thanksgiving, of course. But nobody likes it. It's bad. I mean, there's no way to cook it that's good. Like, I've had the fried turkey. I've had the grilled and barbecue. I even did a demo of the barbecue turkey on Grub Street. I've had every kind of shtupped and stuffed and brined and, you know.
How was the shtupped?
I mean, I had the turducken. And it was bad. They're all bad. And because turkey is bad. And they, when they talk about, like, for example, the heritage people whose work I admire and whose pork is so good, like, they'll tell you, oh, you know, there's all these wonderful heritage breeds of turkey. They're even worse. I mean, as bad as turkey is, at least the butterball turkey, they
deprive it of its ability to move. So yes, that the breast is genetically enlarged, white, double D.
Yeah. You know,
you should like it, Josh.
I should like it. I do like it. It's like a Russ Meyer poultry. But it tastes bad.
And Swedish reverie.
You know, I do two meats. I have a turkey, so people feel like they're, you know, it's Thanksgiving. But then I have another meat that's the real meat. The turkey is the beard, you know.
The Thanksgiving beard? What's the other one? Brisket.
I'll tell you what I'm doing at this can I Thanksgiving.
Come?
You are coming.
I know.
I'm going to make Turk au Vin. You know, if you've heard of Coq au Vin.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Okay.
Coq au Vin, the classic French chicken stew. Really, it's supposed to be made with an old rooster, but anyway, it's a winey.
Delicious.
Stew with bacon in it and mushrooms, and it's very intense.
And you know that turkey can stand up to that amount of time of cooking?
It stands up better. It's a bigger, heavier animal.
Okay.
So you get, but you
have
did to,
not think of this on your own.
Yeah, I did.
No,
Stephen, don't you know who I am? do I have to take Beard Award out and show it to you physically? Like, I have to wear it like Paul Bocuse does?
I don't. You know? Do you have one?
What is that, a joke?
Oh snap! Okay, you thought of it on your own.
I didn't bring you on board here to insult me, Stephen. You're supposed to be my supportive and...
No,
and
that's not the bargain we made.
You're Mike, like, you're supposed to be the Robin Quivers of gastronomy.
She cuts him down.
No.
I would Steffi, never have agreed if I think couldn't you would be barbed.
Have. I think, well, you are barbed.
Yeah.
Are you done now with all of your...
I'm impressed with the Coq au Vin, turkey Coq au Vin. Turk au Vin.
Turk au Vin. Well, essentially, the Turk au Vin is Coq au Vin made with turkey legs. Turkey legs are available. They're very big. They're a pain in the ass to eat, like all legs are. But you stew them. There's an immense amount of flavor that resides in the bone and the dark meat and all the collagen that's in that tissue. So you cook it down. Then you debone it and you take out the meat and the skin and all the good flavorful parts. And then basically you take it the next day and you skim it and so forth. I'll tell you all about it when we come back after the break.
So I'm down and so I'm out, but so are many others. So I feel like trying to hide my head neath these covers. Life is like the seasons. After winter comes the spring. So I'll keep this smile a while and see what tomorrow brings.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, Mr. Cutlets, and I'm here at the Heritage Radio Network, Roberta's, sponsored by Fairway Market. I'm here with my friend, ace newspaper reporter Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
Stephanie was asking me about my recipe that I'm going to be doing. I'm not doing a roasted turkey. I'm doing turco van, which you cook just like coco van. But the mistake that people make with any kind of stews like this is they serve them hot.
Oh.
Very few foods should be served hot.
Yeah, you say that.
I think almost 90% of foods are better if you serve them like warm or even tepid.
You just think the flavor is stronger?
You taste it better.
It's true. It's too hot. It melds better.
It tastes better and it melds better. And then think about when you go after a meal or if you come home, you're drunk, whatever, and the something is just sitting there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much better. I mean, an egg needs to be fresh. Even an egg is better not super hot. I don't know if I can think of a single thing that's better hot.
Pizza's better a little.
No, I don't think it is.
A little warm. No, you're right. Even pizza's not that good hot. I like to let it sit.
Especially pizza, because the cheese goes good.
Totally.
Anyway, so the turco van, like coco van and all these things, should go in the refrigerator overnight.
Oh.
You make that. You get the stuff today. You make it tomorrow.
Okay.
Or Tuesday. And you stick it in the refrigerator. Then the fat comes to the top and turns hard.
Okay.
So you skim off some of the fat.
Not all of it.
No, right. No, you couldn't if you wanted. Yeah. But even, you shouldn't anyway.
Okay.
And if you want, you could even save the fat, but it's turkey fat, so what are you going to do with it? And then you just reheat it when the people come over.
And then just let it sit out.
Yeah. I mean, you got to take the meat off and everything, but whatever.
Now, Josh, what kind of wine?
That's just the beer. The real meat should be kind of a roast.
Well, I was going to ask about the Turkovan.
I thought you were going to... No. Oh, what kind of the wine?
What kind of wine do you use when you're cooking? Like, how much do you want to spend on a bottle?
Well...
Like, what kind of bottle?
I use a bottle of dry white wine that costs between $6 and $10.
Oh, really? So not stuff you would drink?
I drink wine that costs... You don't drink wine between the cost between $6 and $10?
I might not drink. I'd probably go for $9.
Six is too... You wouldn't drink six. But you would drink, like, an $8 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Generally, you should
try. Does it matter that much?
Yes, you should. Well, think about it. You're eating it.
I just don't know what gets cooked off in the cooking
process. Alcohol gets cooked off, but I mean, like, it's like anything else. Like, you know, like the old saying, so you can't shine shit. Like, people who use inferior meat or produce, no matter what they do to it, it's never going to be good. And if you make a dish that's a winey dish that has crappy wine in it, it'll always be crappy.
Why are you using white wine and not red?
I am using red.
Oh, you said white.
No, did I? The red wine should be dry, and you should use a whole bottle of it. It shouldn't be, if it's a big pot, a bottle of it, and you know, you also want to have a little stock or whatever, but.
Are you using little cipollini onions?
Yeah, the little, that's a pain in the, you know, I don't want to get too much into the details.
Okay.
This is not like a recipe show, but obviously, though, you clearly want to use a lot of bacon. It's very important. And it should be good bacon in big pieces, not like little Oscar Mayer, you know, slender scraps or whatever. Now, Steffi, the turco van is the beard.
Mm.
But then the main thing is like that. This is your chance. You have a bunch of people coming. You know, most of us have small apartments. And even those of us that don't rarely get to entertain and feed more than two or three people at a time.
True.
So this is a chance to make one of those magnificent roasts. The crown roast of veal, the baron of lamb, things like that.
Yep.
It's full saddle. You know, that like...
Can you do... Yeah.
Okay, I mean, go ahead. Why not? Yeah. I mean, it fits in the oven.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the thing is that sometimes it's hard to get those big things on short notice. But like, you know, the Fairway happens to be very good. And the service butchers at Fairway are the best in the city. And I bet... Well, now it might be a bit short notice. But... I bet if you ask them, they might be able to get it in a day or two. I like a rack of veal. To me, that's the ultimate. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love a standing rib roast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? A beautiful encrusted crown roast of pork, you know. But to me, a beautiful, untrimmed, milk-fed veal rack is the ultimate in 19th century luxury.
With what kind of sauce?
Well, when I did it the last time, I made a sauce that was marsala and and Morels and cream.
Man. Cream. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to have heavy
cream. You have cream. To have cream with that.
Yeah.
But let's get back to your Thanksgiving.
But I'm not making a veal rack this
You're making
for
turkey.
My Thanksgiving. But no, this the other meat is, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to braise out a lamb shoulder. I'm going to have a boned lamb shoulder. I'm going to braise it. I'm going to keep it in the refrigerator. It's going to be all done when the first person shows up. And then I stick it in the oven and let it get hot and crusty and crispy on the outside.
Damn.
So it looks like a roast and they think they're going to be eating the roast. But then they, you know, you slice it and it just is all like totally falling apart and, you know, a quivering mass of lamby gelatin and pungent lamb fat flavor penetrated through with tons of garlic and, and thyme and so forth.
And then can I ask you, will you tell me about, do you care about the vegetables at Thanksgiving? I know you don't normally, but for the rest of us that enjoy them?
Well, you know, my approach with the vegetables with these kind of things is, you know, like if you take a vegetables and you put it in a little roasting pan, like a Pyrex roasting pan with some butter, it'll be good. They all will caramelize and turn brown.
That's nice.
I mean,
that's
you could
simple.
Make, you know, sometimes like one thing when I was married, you know, I was married at one time.
So. I've even met the said ex-wife.
Yes. Well, listen, my ex-wife, she was from Del City, Oklahoma, and she introduced me to the green bean casserole with the mushroom soup and turkey onions.
It's good.
It's good.
It's good.
It's good.
And
yeah, everyone loves it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's another one you can make.
And you
make
know the other
time.
One that's good that everyone makes fun of but enjoys is the sweet potatoes with the marshmallows.
I find that to be a little childish, personally.
Really? I think that fits right in with this bean casserole. It's like one of those repulsive but amazing American traditions.
Well, maybe someone like you will make that and bring it with them. I'm just going to cook some parsnips or turnips in brown butter. And
what about Brussels sprouts?
Well, yeah, Danit asked for the Brussels sprouts.
That would be good.
But paramount importance to any meal cooked in my or any other house, of course, is the potato.
Okay.
Potato is what matters most. And the potato, in this case, I'm going to make a gratin. Now, the problem, as you know, with a gratin is that, as with macaroni and cheese, the part anybody really wants is the crusty top part.
Mm-hmm.
So you solve that problem partially, but you get a huge, broad pan so that the whole thing is not more than an inch and a half deep.
Okay.
But then still you have all this like white unbrowned. I mean, you know, I don't like unbrowned things.
I like it a little bit, though. No,
well, I like it, too. Certainly, I like it. I don't like it when it's hot. I can tell you that it should definitely be served tepid.
Yes.
But wouldn't it be better, Stephanie, if the top was crusty and the bottom was even crustier?
I feel like this is an episode of Seinfeld with the muffin top. They can only sell the tops of muffins.
Well, you know what? That's the whole trend and evolution of food in our time, is to take the parts you want. I mean, think about pork belly and stuff like that. Like, it used to be people would eat a pork chop and they'd get the good fatty edge and they thought there was nothing that they could do except eat the lean eye of the chop. And then now we came along in pork chops so that every bite is like the edge.
Right. So
that's
how are
the
you
way
gonna,
food evolution has worked.
What's
the
your
hamburger,
plan?
It's all crust now. What?
What's your plan for the gratin?
Well, I'll tell you after we have our commercial message.
It was a rhyme, though.
Hi, this is Josh Ozersky, and we're here at the Mr. Cutlets Show. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick, sponsored by Fairway Market, and not just extolling it because it's sponsoring us, but because Fairway Market is the best retail meat in the city by far.
Do you go to both locations?
No. Well, no. I really only go to the Red Hook location, but I went, originally got turned on to it on the Upper West Side location.
Of course.
It's all under the direction of Ray Venezia, who is the meat... I mean, when I say all, I mean the meat program is under the direction of this guy, Ray Venezia. And Ray is like... He's another one like a Pat LaFrieda, like a true meat man. Like, he's in the third generation. Like, just like Pat, he's a third generation meat man and, like, put in years and years as a cutter. Like, knows everything about meat. Not just, like, ordering it to come in a box and cryovax, but, like, really knows meat. What were we talking about? Gratins?
We were talking about how were you going... Okay, so you only like the crusty brown...
Right.
Top of the gratin.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not going to complain, but that's the best part. And everyone, you know, not everybody always gets that. So what I do is I have a good method. I have a double nonstick griddle that goes over two burners, which I bought specifically really for potatoes, because really that's the most important thing. Anything that I brown or saute, I like that kind of pan best.
Okay.
And potatoes, it's really... ideal for. And what you do is you make a gratin with, you may not know this, people always assume that a gratin is cheese. It doesn't even really have to have cheese, really just cream and salt and pepper and nutmeg, and the potato starch interacting with the cream kind of makes something like cheese, if that's not too disgusting.
No, I think that's important to know, because everyone thinks it's cheese.
No, well, sometimes it is cheese, yeah. And if I do, sometimes I'll put in like a good...
I've had it without cheese.
...cave-aged Gruyere or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, you make it ahead of time, and then you take all those potatoes and you put them on the double griddle. That's what I'll do. And I'll set it on the lowest possible heat and leave it there and forget about it.
Okay.
And... it, like 3 hours later, you come back.
Wow, really?
And the bottom is one crusted brown mass.
So basically, it's like hash browns.
Well, I mean, what could be better than it being hash browns? But the bottom is one crusted brown mass, but the cheese in the middle is still not completely melted because you have such low heat that it's really not transferring the heat through the mass of
that's it. How you get that brown crispy.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but the Thanksgiving I had, or the Christmas where Cynthia came, my ex-wife.
Yes.
And remember, like, she...
Yeah, she turned it off.
She turned it off. No, she turned... Oh, I turned over. You remember?
That, like, caused a major...
A major fight. It brought back all the
you
old
were
memories.
So mad.
I mean, really...
Who turned off my potatoes?
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, who you were married to me for 5 years. Like, you know, like I'm a control freak that only thinks about food. You know what I mean? Like, that, like, is obsessed with browning. And, like, yeah, that's what I want. It's, like, you to come in and, like, cuckold my potatoes or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that was, oh, God.
You kicked her out after that, I
think. Yeah, we had to send her in a car service. Oh, my God. It was funny, and my now live-in girlfriend was there. That was when she met her, Denise.
I remember. Who turned off my potatoes?
Oh, Jesus. All right, so anyway.
Sorry.
I think that... that basic model will work for most people. If you buy the stuff tonight, make whatever you make things that can be made ahead of time and then reheated. The only thing that's really not like that is a roast. A roast has to come out, sit for half an hour, and then be carved. But, you know, even with the case of a roast or something, you can, like in restaurants, you know, like they, if you order like the veal chop at Alto, they don't take the veal chop and cook it. It's already like half cooked, and then they finish it. But of course, that's a tricky thing.
Yeah. I mean, why can't you do it to time it right?
Maybe they don't do that, actually. Maybe they don't do that at Aldo. But they do things like that.
But they're professionals.
They're professionals. Anyway, I don't know if... Anyway, that's neither...
Can I ask you a question? Another holiday question, but just quick off topic.
Yeah, please.
As a Jew, I don't know the answer to that. What's the traditional Christmas meal? My sister was just asking me. We couldn't figure it out.
I think they like to have a ham.
Really?
A ham. Well, you know, Gentiles love ham.
But it's not... I think it's a roast.
Well, the English... The traditional English meal is a big roast beef and a Yorkshire pudding and so on. But in America, particularly in the South... Well, ham is associated with a lot of ceremonial occasions.
Why can't the Jews have a holiday with ham?
I know, right? Well, why can't we have it? There's no good food holiday. There's no good food. Why are Jews obsessed with food? Or the, like, all the connoisseurs and feinschmeckers and food writers are all Jews. And everyone, like, if you got together, the people
that
are...
Is that true?
Well, no, it's not true, but the people
Reichel,
that are...
Reichel, Leventhal, is true. Who else?
Well, I don't Sifton, know if she, I don't know if she's Jewish.
Reichel isn't, maybe not.
I don't know if she is
Sifton
or not.
Is Sifton Jewish? That's a
no,
Jewish.
No, he's... I don't think he is. I think he's a WASP. Oh. And Plattis. I mean, there are a lot of them. Or maybe I'm exaggerating. The point is, okay, though, that Jews as a sector of society, particularly in this part of the country, tend to be obsessed with food and into food. And yet our own food tradition is... so impoverished.
Well, because it, that we, even WASPs we were have impoverished speak. Historically.
Well, so Italians are more impoverished than anybody, and their food is the best.
Yeah, but we were in Russia. We weren't in sunny Italy with, you know, olives growing. And I mean, what were we going to... We had potatoes and meat. We didn't have very much to work with.
It's
the Italians
true.
Had more raw ingredients.
That's
to work
true.
With.
The Russian food is almost as bad as Jewish food.
It is the same.
Yeah, it actually is the same.
We
isn't
are Russian.
It?
I mean, I am Russian.
Now, Stephanie, yes. You're probably wondering what I'm going to have for dessert.
So that's the end of the...
Well, no, I guess just to say that get turkey in some form, but eschew it as the primary focus of the meal since it's bad. And if you want to know, you know, my thoughts on the subject, although you've already heard them, but like I wrote a thing called A Bad Bird some years ago in Slash Food. And if you Google A Bad Bird and Slash Food, you'll find that essay. But it repeats in the same...
How does turkey survive the rest of the year? I guess it's cold cuts.
It's a cold
cuts. I mean, no one ever buys a turkey the entire rest of the year.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know what's interesting? You know who buys a lot of turkeys and not just at Thanksgiving? Israel. Israel is the number one consumer of turkey in the entire world. Israel eats more turkeys than the whole America. It's a true fact.
What do they do with it?
They eat. What do you mean? I just said they eat it.
But how do they cook it?
Well, that's regular? What goes in their shawarma, for example.
Really?
Yeah. They don't have like big turkey dinners. They just it. I think shawarma and meatballs, and they like it for those reasons. And then obviously, turkey goes on to club sandwiches. But yeah, it's true. You know. I would say make the turkey a secondary focus. And then have something really good, a special, like a big roast or something ambitious. There's a lot of good new cookbooks out. I mean, you remember when I made the 7-hour leg of lamb from Andrew Carmelini's Urban Italian
amazing.
Cookbook?
It was amazing.
Marco has a nice recipe in the new Marco Canora cookbook for a braised duck with olives and something else.
Are these things that people actually, I guess, Carmelini, we did at home, and it worked perfectly.
It worked perfect. In fact, the Carmelini cookbook is so good that literally, even if you do it wrong, it comes out great.
That's very generous of him.
I mean, and then there's the Barbara Kafka roast. I mean, there's a lot of great cookbooks. I almost feel like they could burn all the cookbooks published before 1988 and after 1993. And the world would have more great cookbooks than it knew what to do with.
Wait a minute. So we want 88 to 93?
Or whatever. Any 5-year period, like after the invention of good food in the 80s. You know? Anyway, Steffi, the dessert, in case you were wondering, is Cozy Shack pudding, as always.
As always. Unless it's sherbet.
Yes. Well, maybe a tub of rainbow sherbet with 12 spoons stuck in it left in the middle of the table.
That's how you end it. It was Ozersky meal. Yeah.
Anyway, I'll see you back here for our next show. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Santa.